It's approximately 1:38 p.m. on February the 22nd, 2012. I'm in the hearing room for the OP on the ninth floor of the DNA building in Agana, Guam. I'm Anthony Camacho. I'm serving as a hearing officer, and this is for In-Ray Infratech, Inc., appeal number OPA-PA-11-19, OPA-PA-11-20, and OPA-PA-11-21, which have all been consolidated. We are here for day two of the formal hearing in this matter. Will the members of the Office of Public Accountability present for this hearing please identify themselves for the record?
Doris Flores Brooks, Public Auditor.
Ann Camacho, Appeals Administrator.
Llewellyn Tulahi, Quality Assurance Reviewer.
Thank you. Will the appellant please identify himself and any institutional representatives with him for the record? Thank you, Mr. Goganini, Mrs. Goganini. Will the counsel for DOE please identify herself for the record and any institutional representatives with her this afternoon?
Rebecca Perez, counsel for DOE. With me is Mark Pito, supply management administrator for the department.
Thank you, Ms. Perez. As this is day two and both sides have rested, we are here for the closing arguments. As I stated in the scheduling order and also at the end of the hearing yesterday, we will proceed with the closing arguments of the appellant, followed by the closing arguments of DOE, and the appellant will have opportunity for a brief rebuttal at the end of DOE's closing argument. That said, are there any other preliminary matters before we proceed?
Not from DOE.
All right, so Mr. Goganini, you have the floor for your closing argument.
Thank you, Mr. Camacho, and Ms. Flores, our public auditor, and ladies and gentlemen. I want to stress one thing, is what we are doing here is not against GDOE, it is against the procedure. There are things that happen on this particular case that we brought to appeal, and as we try to prove, GDOE was not adequately prepared for all the intended bidders to inspect all the work, all the specific works. All they provided at the time of mandatory site visit is onto the roof. None of the rooms that require other structural repairs were not taken in. And at the time of site visits, we did notice some cleaning stuff going on, getting ready for the reopening of the schools. So if DOE wanted to show some of the rooms, they would have planned properly, and then they would be able to show at least some of the rooms, if not everything, so that the bidders will have some sort of an idea of what they are looking at in terms of the structural repairs. And in addition, when we and GDOE force all the contractors to climb whatever they can hold on to go onto the rooftops, and the buildings, some of them are way high where they cannot, they didn't have an access. So we have to see from the far buildings, condition of the other roofs, and whatever we can get of it. And even the roofs that we were able to climb on, the condition of the roof did not give any opportunity for us to identify the cracks or any other sort of works that needs to be done from the top of the roof. And the most important thing is GDOE continued with the bid process, procurement process, even though they received the protest prior to the bid opening, and giving the benefit of doubt, like Mr. Pito claimed during the trial, that he was not aware of the protest until the afternoon of October 4th. And even then, they continued the procurement process of the 38 and 39 the following 2 days sequentially. So that we believe that was not supposed to be happening as per procurement regulations. And during the trial, GDOE consistently at least tried to prove that the unit prices has no relevancy to the lump sum bids, and whereas the bid form clearly states that the unit prices must conform with the lump sum prices of the bid submitted. And GDOE also had opportunity since August 5th, we sent email addressed to Mr. Pito, asking some questions, representing their names, and which they failed to give the representative names and has the knowledge. We were very specific on that. We just don't want to go and open a door and then just go ourselves and take a look at it, because it's very hard, some of the things, to visually inspect unless a person with the thorough knowledge about the repairs to be done was present during our visits. Then we can get a clear picture, reasonable information at least. Otherwise, we may not be able to get the reasonable information for us to put a reasonable bid, which is most economical and competitive. And in this process, it is clearly known that GDOE did not provide equal opportunity to all the bidders by leaving the certain things for the assumption of each individual contractor, regardless of whether it's a lump sum bid or unit price bid. All the participants did not have an equal opportunity at the time of the bid because of the missing information and lack of the information in the drawings and the specs and scope of work given. And there are drawings in the package without scale, and which is even for lump sum bids, it is very important that each bidder has a scale drawing so that they can come up with accurate quantities and avoid any future discrepancies or debates or arguments later in regards to that. Because again, if GDOE did not give quantities and leave each contractor, they may assume certain things, and there is no procedural things in the specifications given how those things will be identified, how their bid is based on what, because the unit prices are not conforming, which is making the bids unbalanced. And another thing, the very basic intention of any procurement process is to make sure all the bidders have equal opportunity, in which is not given in this case. And also, during the trial, one of the world well-known manufacturer who manufactures this type of products in this type of business for 100 years, and the representative had over 25 years of experience, clearly stated that he has never seen a bid this kind of missing information, and so much information missing, it became like up to each individual contractor to decide what to bid and where to bid and how to bid. And also another thing I would like to point out is in the lump sum contracts, we have participated in lump sum contracts for both federal and the local governments for 15 years ourselves. And any lump sum contracts, usually it is required to submit a breakdown of each lump sum unit, prices, or a lump sum price of each activity before the execution of the work, not during the bid process. If they're required during the bid process, once again, they should be confirming that how they came up with the lump sum and the unit prices. And if GDOE, as GDOE claimed, if they held up reasonable quantities with them, they should have provided those to each bidder in the bid package, so that those quantities can be used for the calculations and the estimation purposes, and still go with a lump sum contract at that point. It could have been made a different mechanism at that point. At least everybody has the equal opportunity, is looking at the same drawings, same numbers, everything is same, so they can determine the lowest responsive and responsible. As you know, we have, I'm sure every agency here had an experience, not necessarily lowest is always the best. Lowest maybe sometimes the best, sometimes not best, because there are some missing information, and then they have incidents happen in Guam and other islands, at least have been, that some projects getting in the middle of stall and going through the legal battles and all these things during the process. And it is very reasonable for any bidder, prospective bidder, to expect a properly scaled drawings as part of the package. Just to close my closing statement, I want to just make sure that I'm able to express what I said, was that we felt we were not given equal opportunity by lacking the information, and we were not, even though we sent in letters to them requesting with some remedial mechanism, at least we suggested, not necessarily that they have to take it, we suggested some remedial process, what should be done, at least in our opinion, to make it equal opportunity. And GDOE consistently denied our requests, and they changed a portion of the scope of work and added the minimum 5-year experience after the deadline to submit the questions and the questions for our clarifications. And in response to those, the clarification came from GDOE, and we sent an additional clarification request. They came back and they said the time to submit questions is passed, so that no questions will be taken or answered. No, the questions we asked is not new. The question was arise out of the response that we got from GDOE, and they had at least the minimal responsibility to address that particular question coming out of their responses, which GDOE failed also that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gogini. Ms. Paris?
Thank you. Well, it's interesting that Mr. Gogini would say in his closing arguments that he submitted his suggestions as to how DOE should run the process of administering this bid, because I think it's clear from the way the case was presented, the appeal was presented, and quite frankly, even the protest underlying the appeal, that this is all about Mr. Gogineni presenting his case about how he thinks this IFB should be run, how he thinks it should have been done. But he has not produced any evidence that the site visits, the drawings, the requirement for unit prices, in addition to, but not as a portion of the lump sum bid, or how the bids would be determined to be lowest and responsive. He's produced no evidence that any of those things violated applicable law or regulation, or quite frankly, even industry standard for scope, for projects of this scope and size. He's presented opinions that were countered by GDOE's own witness in this matter, who said that these things were done, in particular these site visits, by industry standard, and that people who had been in this practice of bidding or in the experience or knowledgeable about how this would go had plenty of opportunity at the mandatory site visits and for additional site visits to conduct their own inspections of the work sites and what work would need to be done. The only issue properly on appeal before the OPA at this point is the single issue that was addressed in both the underlying protest and in the appeal based on the decision and order of the hearing officer identifying the issues before it, and that is whether or not GDOE was unprepared for the site visits. GDOE presented evidence that the site visits were conducted. They were made mandatory for a reason. That was so that no bidder would be making bids sight unseen, so that no bidder could say they did not have an opportunity, or nor were they even required to go and look at these sites. Every bidder was given an opportunity to submit written questions, conduct additional inspections, and the first at the mandatory visit to conduct their visual inspection of the work sites. So on that loan issue that is properly before the OPA, GDOE has established that everybody's entitled to their opinion, and Mr. Goganini obviously is of the opinion that these site visits were less than perfect. But perfect is not the standard. Reasonable, equal opportunity, open from competition, and opportunity to inspect the work site, question the scope of work in the bid, ask questions, get answers, all of those were provided. So on that issue, we believe that Mr. Goganini's allegations herein are simply without merit. Without waiving objection to that being the only issue properly before the OPA, I will continue to address other issues that arose during testimony taken in this matter. One that was raised by Mr. Goganini is that there was, I believe, he believes there was just confusion all around about whether or not this was a lump sum bid, and that he hinged his entire argument on the fact that unit prices were required. But it was clear in the wording of the bid, it was clear that this was a lump sum bid. And we established through testimony that it is industry practice to ask for a lump sum bid, that the lump sum will be used to determine the lowest, most responsive bidder, and that unit prices, though asked for, when it's clear that they're not going to be used in determining who is the lowest bidder, unit prices can be asked for in preparation for possible change orders that may not even be issued. So GDOE committed no error in saying this is a lump sum bid. This is how we will choose the winning bidder, responsiveness, bid price, and then eventually responsibility. And bids were submitted, so it doesn't appear that there was so much confusion that nobody could properly submit or could submit a bid. Bids were submitted. We established that through testimony. Issues regarding whether square footage or other work conditions could be gleaned from the bid documents and the site visits, I believe, were also thoroughly answered by GDOE's witnesses. The drawings, the condition of the work sites, the information, the scope of work, all provided information so that a reasonable bidder could, in a fashion that was not burdensome, could determine what price they would want to submit to do this work. And that's actually what this is. This is a bid where the bidder takes the risk of saying, I can do what you asked for this price. That's what a lump sum bid means. We're not buying things out of a catalog. We're not buying things off the shelf. We're saying, this is what we need you to do. Here's your information, ask your questions, go look at the worksite, tell me how much you're going to charge me to do this work. And that's the risk that is inherent in submitting a bid, in every bid of that type. Whether you're doing roof repair or, as was established, building a house. Can you build this for me? If yes, how much? And that's how this bid was packaged. Whether to require a warranty for labor and the application process is another issue that I believe is without merit, and I think we have established is without merit. Again, Mr. Govanetti, it's just a matter of opinion. I don't think they should have to have an applicator warrant their work. That's just not right. Not right is not the case. This is, we're paying, GDOE is paying, quite frankly, big money to get this work done. We want the product and we want the work guaranteed. And it wasn't unreasonable to put it in there. By industry standards, it makes sense to be sure that the people providing labor on projects of this size and, quite frankly, projects of a much smaller scale know what they're doing and that they have experience to speak to that, because you want to be sure that you're not going to be dealing with somebody who doesn't know how to apply a product. Mr. Govanetti's own witness, Mr. Flores, said we don't even deal with, what have you done in the past. There's specific standards for that, and the standard that GDOE put out in this bid was not unreasonable. Give us a certain number of years of experience to show that you know how to do what we're hiring you to do. With regard to additional site visits, it's unfortunate that really what Mr. Govanetti's argument came down to is I didn't get a name and a number of one specific person to contact at the school. Because I think that only further supports what this boils down to, which is Mr. Govanetti thought it should have been handled differently. These are school campuses, sites of mandatory site visits. Every bidder had been there before. They contained, the school campuses contained clearly marked signs. Here's the front office. You want to go conduct a site visit? Just let the front office know. Schedule a time to go there. You will be escorted around the school campus and given an opportunity to conduct a site visit. Quite frankly, if anything was unreasonable, it was asking for the name and the number of a specific person at each of 40 or 37 schools, just so that it would be more convenient for the bidder to call only one person. There's nothing burdensome about saying, go to the front office during the hours of the school's operations, let them know that you're there for there. The administration knows we may have bidders coming, and conduct your walk around. That's not burdensome. Mr. Govanetti correctly says, that he served his protest on the 5th of October to the GDOE offices. It was received by the GDOE offices on the 5th. On the 5th, the morning of the 5th, the third in a series of bids for these projects was being opened. On the 6th and the 7th, the bids were open for IFB 38 and 39 respectively. No award has been made for these protested bids. The process has been stopped. The intent of stopping a process so that a protest or appeal can be decided is being honored. No award has yet been made for these appeals. The timing for the receipt of that, of Mr. Govanetti's underlying protest, is unfortunate, but there has been no violation of the intent to see to it that no award is made when there is a pending protest or appeal. GDOE established by Mr. Pito's testimony, there is no award yet for these projects. What Mr. Govanetti failed to establish, however, was that he has any interest at all in the outcome of the protest, the appeal, this process, or anything associated with it, because he submitted a protest in the middle that was received on the third day of 5 sequential days of openings for these projects. Mr. Govanetti did not submit a bid for any of them. He has not established that he has any interest in the outcome of these proceedings. He cannot win because he did not submit. There's nothing to give him by this. And when he filed those protests, And even if he says it should have been stayed, that's correct, but it doesn't, the delay in ceasing the proceedings towards award does not overcome the fact that this was during the bid openings. Mr. Goganeni should have submitted. His protest would have been in place, but he should have submitted a bid if he was interested in being awarded a bid. He has not established any interest in the outcome of these proceedings. And to sum it up, again, I think that it's quite clear that Mr. Goganeni has a very active personal and professional interest in how this appeal will turn out because he's handled it himself, and I commend him. He's really, you know, he sat here and he's gone through and he's asked his questions. It's apparent that it means something to him, but I think again it boils down to it means something to him because he thinks GDOE should have put out the perfect bid, perfect in his mind. But perfect in his mind is not the same as a lawful, reasonable, calculated to ensure competition and accurate bids. It's not the same process. The only thing that Mr. Goganeni has established is that he disagrees as a matter of opinion with how the bid was packaged and how the site visits were conducted. But opinion isn't what we're ruling on here today. It's not what we should be discussing by virtue of the appeal process. It should be whether or not GDOE put out a lawful, reasonable bid, for which I remind everyone we did receive, in fact, multiple bids in response. So it's unfortunate, and I do commend Mr. Goganeni for his sitting here and handling it pro se in the fashion that he did, but he simply has not established that there's anything wrong with the way that the site visits occurred, that the bids were packaged, and for the single issue of whether or not the openings occurred after a protest was received. Again, there has been no award. That is the primary purpose of saying stay these proceedings. Do not award until a protest or appeal has been resolved. And there is no award pending. So we have honored, GDOE has honored the intent of that regulation. Thank you.
Mr. Goodwin, any brief rebuttal?
Yes. A few things. I want to, as I stated earlier, the 5 years experience requirement, along with corner-to-corner paint requirement, was put out as part of Amendment 9, which was after the deadline to submit questions and answers. As soon as we received Amendment 9, either the same day or very next day, we sent an email raising concerns about those two requirements, and the response from GDOE is that the time for the questions has passed, so we will not entertain any more questions. So if we can pose a new question there. The question is setting a new standard after the deadline is not reasonable for anybody. If they set something new that is not part of the original bid package, they should give an opportunity to all the bidders to raise a question and concern on those new requirements, which puts, as our representative said, the well-known manufacturer, 3M, out of this bid completely, which was recommended by a well-established consultants from the mainland for the GEEB schools. They were just chose that particular product for the schools when they are having problems with, problems in leaks and other issues. And also another thing, Ms. Perez was saying that we didn't have an interest. It's not that we didn't have interest or we lacked interest. We believe putting a bid together is a burdensome and too risky because the information is not complete and inconsistent is not giving equal opportunity. Once again, we believe in that there is no equal opportunity. And it is not that that was the first letter they received on the third day of the bid. We wrote before even the bid opening process started on September 28th, if I remember the date exactly, the initial letter, before even the very first bid was opened. at least a few days before the hospital was opened, requesting the same information, and then the same way we did at that time, saying if you do not address these things, please consider this as an official protest. And in response to that, we got a letter from GDOE saying that, do you really want to protest it? At that time, we gave benefit of doubt to GDOE once again. We want to make sure that what we believe is true or not, accurate or not. So we waited for 2 weeks to go on. I wanted to see that there are, what I'm claiming is right or wrong. After observing 35 and 36, how the bids were presented, whoever, two or three companies submitted their bids. When we looked at the unit prices submitted, once again, are not conforming to the lump sums. Lump sum bid they submitted. So in a bid form, there are two prices given by each bidder, which is in national procurement regulations. When you give a bid, you give one price, only one price, and you're going to stick with that price. So by having two prices in it, you are causing a confusion after winning the bid. The contractor may come back and say, hey, I have another price here. We didn't have this. So since we have all these discrepancies, I want you to use my unit price, which is part of the bid package, which is much higher than the lump sum bid. So that's how we completed the quantities of 35 and 36. We spent late nights to compute each and every quantity, so we use those to confirm that we have a valid reason to protest. So when I computed based on the quantities I came up with, the unit prices and the lump sum bids are not certainly conforming. And in fact, if my estimate, my takeoff is accurate, the lump sum bids is just enough for the roof coating only. It is not covering the rest of the structural repairs such as ceiling spalls, roof cracks, wall cracks, beam cracks. There are other things. So the lump sum bids are not even enough if we use unit prices and multiply with the quantities we got from our takeoff. So it is at that point we felt we have a valid reason because we are, you know, not all the bidders are having equal opportunities. So we decided at that time once again to submit a protest. That was actually a second protest in our case. And also, Ms. Perez said we do not have interest because we did not submit the bids. If we submit a protest and we go ahead and submit a bid, we felt that it is contradicting to our first letter. When we protest, we either stick with the protest or we don't protest at all. When we protest today and we submit the bid, that means the first one is contradicting, and the second one is contradicting the first one, and it defeats the whole purpose. We shouldn't be even submitting a protest letter, first of all. If we are going to turn in a bid. So it is not that we are lacking interest. We believe in that the procedure there is not providing equal opportunity. And another thing, we are not asking or requesting for a perfect bid, or we are not telling GDOE how to administer, or we are not trying to administer the bids for them. We just gave a suggestion based on our experience, specifically with federal government, DOE projects. We have submitted bids for DOE. We have seen bids like this, and we are working currently on one of the bids. When situations like this, when the information is not clear, they always gave assumptions to everybody. So everybody assumes the same thing under the same scenario and submits the bid. So that way, they are all looking at apple to apple. It is not somebody selling apple and somebody else is bringing orange with it because he thinks that's what it is, the spec is calling for, or the scope of what he's calling for. So all we said is, this is how we were dealing, so this is one way of doing it. We didn't tell that it's the only way. So DOE, at that point, they have consultants hired for this, should have sat with their consultants and discussed with them and see what they believe would be better or what they should be doing to give equal opportunity to everybody. So that.
Another thing, Ms. Perez said they wanted to make sure none of the bidders are bidding on unseen site conditions. As I repeatedly mentioned and asked during the trial, we presented that none of the rooms were open. And we have to understand that the structural work is inside the rooms. So you left each and every bidder unseen condition of each room and ask them, it is up to them to go back and re-inspect and talk to the person of, in the school that has no knowledge. Some of the schools, when we went there for site visits, they are not even aware that there are contractors coming for site visits, mandatory site visits. Even the principals were not aware of it. So if we go back, as they claim, and ask the principal of whoever is in charge, that we are here to inspect these things, do they have an idea what we are going to inspect, what rooms we are going to go in, or what we are looking for? Can we ask them a question? They have no clue. They can't even tell me where the leak is coming from. Sometimes if there is a head thin crack, we can't see visually. So somebody has to tell. If there is a crack, there is a crack. Whether it's a head thin, a quarter inch, 1 inch, or 2 inch, we still got to inject the solution into it to stop that leak, which we can just see by visually. So someone has to tell there is a leak here, so we can take that into consideration. So which was not given to anybody, which is considered as unseen condition. And we did not ask also for one person for all the schools. We asked representative for each school. Who is the representative? If you take school one, who is representative in that school that is familiar with the scope of work? That's what we asked specifically. We didn't ask one person for all 35 schools or all 21 schools. No, there might be one person per school knowledgeable with the work, so we can go and see him and re-inspect and take measurements and whatever needs to be done. Like during the fire, one of the participants had sent three engineers. Three engineers came up with three different quantities. So that means if there are three engineers from the same company had three different quantities, if you have five bidders, five interested parties went there, how much more you can expect out of it? If each school sends three different people or two different people, you are looking at 10 to 15 different set of numbers there. So does it mean everybody got equal opportunity? Isn't it burdensome for a bidder to just submit a bid because they want to get a bid? And some of the bidders may be doing it because in the anticipation of the change orders, that's why the unit prices were given high. They are not correlating with their lump sum bids. Because they know they can get the change orders using the unit price. So which will be purposely the purpose of the lump sum bid is defeated at that point. And as we stated, we did not want to delay any procedure or anything. That's the reason why we withhold our decision initially to protest, which was sent on September 28th until October 4th, to revisit whether we have valid reasons. So it is not us causing any delay in the process. If DOE is really genuinely interested to stop any delay in this process, they should have addressed these issues, which were raised consistently, but not only by us, the other papers also, some of the questions, and it was repeatedly responded by GDOE saying each paper is advised to go and re-inspect. So it was consistently, the GDOE had a chance to correct their mistakes, and they failed to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gogan. Just a reminder, the parties, you don't have to, but it's in the scheduling order. You may submit a brief concerning what you think the remedies should be in this case, but that's not required. the deadline as stated in the scheduling order. And we will take this matter under advisement and issue a decision in writing in 30 days or less pursuant to the rules after this hearing. Are there any other matters that need to be taken up at this time?
Not from GDOE.
Okay. And I thank the parties for their professional courtesies to each other and the great arguments in both their cases. Thank you. Yeah, we're off the record at 2:14 p.m.